Hello, friends. This is the Out of This World radio program with your host, Ted Marr, broadcasting from the studios of KKNW in Bellevue, Washington on 1150 AM. The program focuses on out-of-this-world information, including psychic phenomena, UFOs, metaphysics, and predictions for the coming years in Seattle, the United States, and beyond. I'm sorry if my throat sounds a little bit rough today, friends. I just flew back from Switzerland last night, and I'm a little jet-lagged, but thanks to the miracles of caffeine and coffee, I think the show should go just fine. We will have only the best psychics and astrologers in the world on our program, and I guarantee it'll be the most interesting radio program you've ever listened to, as you will hear information here that you will simply not hear elsewhere. Out of This World Radio is the fastest-growing psychic and metaphysical UFO radio program in the world, and we now have listeners in over 60 different countries on all the world's continents and are among the top-rated talk shows in Seattle. The purpose of this program is to raise human consciousness to make this world a better place to live, and with everyone's help, I know we can make this planet a better place. When I was in Norway and in Switzerland last week, in Norway at a UFO conference, I broadcast live from the conference, and you can listen to it on my website at www.outofthisworld1150.com. And I wanted to tell you that my listeners in Switzerland and in Norway told me to please slow down when I speak English because it's easier for them, so I'm going to try to slow down today so that people can understand me better. I want to say a special hello to Terry and Ann Kirsten for inviting me to their wonderful conference in Norway last week, and to the many wonderful people I met there, especially to UFO South American expert Louise, who will be on my program in about 2 weeks, and Emma Hansen from Trondheim, Norway, a contactee of the Andromeda civilization, who will also be in my program in 1 week for a truly out-of-this-world interview. I also want to thank everyone in Norway, Switzerland, Japan, the United States, and Canada who've donated to support the radio station, the radio program. For those who'd like to donate, just go to my website at www.outofthisworld1150 and click on the little donate button at the top. Even a dollar will really help. For those who donate $10 or more, they'll receive a free spiritual prayer to protect them, and $25 or more, they'll get a free psychic reading. I also wanted to tell everyone about the wonderful Galactic Wisdom Conference that I'll be sponsoring in Port Townsend, Washington, from November 21st through November 23rd, 2014. The conference will include private room accommodations, some meals, and free psychic readings and workshops from some of the world's best, including Susan Liberty Hall, who will discuss natural healing methods to cure cancer, Scott Lemriel, a UFO contactee with benevolent ETs, Lois Berman, a famous Boston radio and TV psychic, Dr. Susan Shumsky, a famous New York spiritualist, Phoenix Redhawk, a Long Island, New York healer and animal communicator and psychic, Todd Rolston, a Seattle psychic and metaphysician, Teresa Carroll, a well-known and accomplished Seattle psychic, the Emotive Peace Project with Michiko Hayashi from Tokyo, Japan, Tricia McCannon, well-known psychic and UFO contactee from Atlanta, and Gordana Bernard, a famous Swedish spiritualist. The cost for the three-day conference is just $197 if you pre-register by October 24th, 1 week from today. For more information, please see our new website at www.galacticwisdomconference.com or go to www.outofthisworld1150.com and click on the tab for the conference. We will be discussing the conference during the next hour. Tomorrow on Saturday or Sunday, if you are in the Seattle, Washington, USA area, I will be at East West Books passing out information about the event, so please come see me if you're in the Seattle area. I wanted to tell my many listeners around the world some sad news I received this morning. Dr. Masaru Emoto died earlier today from complications. He became sick after he visited China a couple of months ago. We will be devoting part of our next hour at 3 p.m. To his passing with Michiko Hayashi, who is the new director of the Emotive Peace Project, who will be joining us live by telephone from Tokyo. Before we begin, I also would like to thank the many sponsors of this show, including my dear friend Carol's, for designing my website, providing lots of moral support, and without whose friendship and help, this program would not have been possible. My dear friend Ann Nelson, business professor at Walla Walla College. My dear friend Heidi in Switzerland, who's been helping to arrange appearances by Eric von Doniggen, Rolf Stoll, and other wonderful European psychics, my angelic and earthly family, as well as my wonderful sound engineer, Eric Ryder, and my station manager, Eric Crema, without whose help and support this program would not have been possible. I did broadcast last Monday from Norwegian Radio in Bergen, When I get that MP3, I will put it up on my website. We are also working on a link to that station so we can broadcast throughout the Bergen area and perhaps through Norway as well. I also talked to some German television and radio producers at the conference last week, and I hope to go into the German market soon with this program. You can also listen to our show live from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time at www.1150kknw.com. And after the show, you can always listen to the show in the audios at www.outofthisworld1150.com by going to the bottom of the page and clicking on our guests. Today we have a very special program focused in on chemtrails, the secret U.S. government program that operates outside of the law, in my opinion, by dumping hazardous chemicals designed to harm our health without our permission. During the first part of this program, we will have Dr. Therese Enger, a nationally recognized environmental consultant. Later during this hour, we will also have on Scott Stevens, a national recognized weatherman who's been interested in chemtrails for years, who will join us. Either this hour or next hour, definitely, we'll also have Scott Lemriel join us later and give us an overview of the galactic reasons why our government is using chemtrails. Dr. Enger, are you there?
Yes, I am. Correction, I'm not a doctor. I'm just an ordinary person.
Okay. Well, for your work with chemtrails, sir, I'd like to put you up on a pedestal and just say thank you. Thank you. Shall I call you an environmental consultant then? Is that a good term?
Well, I'm a retired environmental consultant.
Okay.
Okay. Well, okay. Why don't we start in the beginning? How does that sound?
Okay, great. Yeah, if you could tell us a little bit about your background and how you got interested in this topic, would be wonderful.
I've got approximately 36 years of experience in the environmental field, either working in industry or as a consultant. And I retired in 2003. But back in the second quarter of 1997, they started the chemtrail up here. We're in north central Pennsylvania. We're right up against the New York State borderline. Mm-hmm. And there were several inquiries from people to me about, you know, what is it, what's in it. And we tried and tried, and we got a few pieces of information with regard to material safety data sheets, which would break down what chemicals or compounds are being used. And then chemtrails became basically a DOD project, a Department of Defense project.
Okay.
And they threw an umbrella over it, and no one could really find out anything. So the only alternative we have was to get people educated on how to properly sample.
Sure.
Including how to deal with labs and also the fact that there had to be change of custody so you could protect evidence, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Initially, when we started looking at it, between myself and some other people here in Pennsylvania that had gotten involved with it and gotten concerned, first of all, the big word that came out, well, this is supposed to stave off global warming, okay?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And then we started looking at the compounds involved, particularly the heavy metals. We found that HARP tends to, the whole idea of HARP becomes enhanced when they lace the upper atmosphere with these chemicals, because then it's ionized and it's easier for the EMP to travel, okay?
Right.
Because it is a ionospheric heater, really, when you look at it.
Sure.
The other thing we realized, too, there were some things with regard to what kinds of things were being dumped. And aluminum and barium, calcium, titanium tended to be the major usual suspects, all right?
Okay.
And you wouldn't expect to find them in any amounts coming down out of the air in rainwater or in melted snow or ice or anything like that. We also took air samples as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The other thing, it affects the pH. Now, what that indicates is that in all of these cases, typically, that the results did not indicate that any of the contaminants would have had to be delivered. They'd have to be delivered in such large amounts, pounds per minute, as a matter of fact, and in concentrated form, and also that it indicated that there were very controlled delivery, dispersion of chemicals by aircraft, okay?
Right.
And it was very, very intentional, mm-hmm. okay? It wasn't a, oops, we opened the wrong valve kind of thing,
sure.
okay? Now, when we started taking a look at, just as a one report I can use, I pulled out of the file here, there were five constituents: so aluminum, barium, calcium, titanium. We had results here of 5.38 milligrams per liter of barium. This is in storm water.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
Barium, 0.2 of a milligram per liter. Calcium, 2.48 milligrams per liter. Titanium, 1.0 milligrams per liter. And a pH of 4.49. Now, in no circumstances would you expect to find those chemicals in storm water.
Okay.
But also, the other interesting little aside to this is that with a pH that low, when you have storm water or rain, okay, coming down, your large sewage treatment plants for cities and large municipalities have biomasses, and their biomasses cannot stay alive at a pH of 4.49. I have seen biomasses die, and as a result, the sewage treatment plant has to discharge untreated sewers because most of those plants don't have storage tankage.
Hmm.
Okay, so it causes a real public health problem.
Interesting.
Now, the other thing that came out of all of this is that there's a whole series of regulations. So it's always interesting to see how the regulators pass regulations, but they don't apply to them.
Sure.
Okay, they apply to everybody else, unfortunately.
Sure.
The other thing we found out with regard to heavy metals, they do interfere with nutritional intake. Okay, and that is because they have higher atomic weights and numbers, and therefore they displace the nutrients. Under those circumstances, you could see a man or a woman who was eating a perfect diet, all the nutrients needed for their lifestyle, weight, and metabolism, and they would look emaciated.
I have to tell you, I hate to break in, but that's what's happened to me thanks to this chemical spraying where I have been living. I've become now nourished.
Full indication, Ted, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Next, they do enhance heart. In that the particulate dispersion tends to contribute to increased ionization of the atmosphere and thus presents an improved conductor for the EMP.
Mm.
Now, what that also means is that you have very large numbers of lightning strikes.
Mm.
You have to remember, lightning doesn't come from the sky down. It comes from the ground up because the core of this planet is the generator.
Okay.
And if you ionize the atmosphere, it becomes a very good conductor.
Mm-hmm.
And that poses some real problems.
Interesting.
Also, the whole idea of chemtrails do contribute to the increase in chemical-induced upper respiratory ailments, particularly with regard to aluminum. All right?
Sure.
You say, well, aluminum isn't heavy. Well, yes, it is as far as atomic weights and numbers go, which has nothing to do with the weight of the metal itself as an alloy. Also, aluminum particulate, which forms like a form of chaff, will interfere with aircraft detection by radars.
Mm.
This has been confirmed by various air traffic controllers, particularly in Boston, Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Also, chemtrails, because of their constituents, do interfere with the germination and pollination of plant life, especially with regard to grains.
Oh.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
When we get into the whole concept of food, you also have to remember that chemtrails is part of a food control program in that your GMOs can do quite well in the environment that chemtrails present, where other plants and grains cannot germinate, therefore they die.
Interesting.
So basically you have a very small number of large companies controlling food that way.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
What people can do is what we've done here. We've found that, for instance, we have problems with corn, beans, and tomato crop failure.
Hmm.
With regard to grains, we've found that you can go to potatoes, which are a viable exchange in diet, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They tend to grow some varieties tend to grow quite well in cold climates like we have here,
mm-hmm.
right? The other alternative you have is a thing called a Jerusalem artichoke.
Hmm.
It's a very old tuber. It looks like ginger root, but it doesn't have the flavor.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be used in any recipe that potatoes are used in, and also it's much more friendly to people who tend to be diabetic, okay? So there's ways to get around this. Chemtrails have the tendency to cause mutations, which result in stillbirth, right?
Okay.
Also, they have the ability to undermine your immune system.
Okay.
That's very important. If that leaves you susceptible to all kinds of things, particularly with regard to the concerns of pandemics that we have now.
Sure.
Also, you have to realize that these metals are basically being used as chemical weapons against us. The aircraft and their pirates, their pilots are the weapons. To say, what could we do about it? If you take a look at the impact right now with regard to crops and people ill, it's very difficult because the government throws you up into an area where you're basically they stonewall you and you can't get information, the only way you can do it is to do your own, take your own samples in a proper manner and get them analyzed properly.
Sure. If I may interrupt, this is what I did in Moses Lake, Washington, where I was living till recently. I had both the air, water, and fish all tested by a laboratory in the Midwest, a reputable university lab. And the sulfur content of the water in Moses Lake is currently 5,100 milligrams per liter, which I consider very, very high. What's troubling is that when temperatures were between 100 to 120 degrees Fahrenheit in eastern Washington this summer, and when literally thousands of acres were burning because of the hot weather in eastern Washington, our government, using our tax dollars, was dumping tons of sulfur on us to make it even hotter, which I find crazy, absolutely crazy. In the laboratory samples I sent you, there's also significant amounts of barium, aluminum, and strontium, as well as calcium, and I think titanium as well.
Yes.
In the SMR, the laboratory report you did for me, and I thank you so much for doing that, Dr. Anger. You said that the results indicate that the contaminant would have to be delivered in large amounts, pounds per MIN. I'm not sure what MIN means. Pounds per minute, in order to have the above concentrations at ground level. This would also indicate a very controlled delivery of dispersion of chemicals, chemtrails by aircraft. And then you write, in normal circumstances, in your SMR report you did, you write, the government would be required to comply with all registration, notification, and permitting requirements as mandated by the U.S. Code of Federal Regulations, but they have placed themselves above the law. In my opinion, I think they're lawless because they violated dozens of CFR sections with the intentional dumping of these chemicals, and they don't care. They do whatever they want to do. And then you talk about there's an increase in chemical-induced upper respiratory ailments. In the Moses Lake Hospital, every time they spray, there's a whole bunch of people that end up in the local hospital with respiratory problems. And the doctors aren't, I don't think most doctors there are aware of the link between chemtrails and the respiratory problems, so they just prescribe the normal drugs. But it's very troubling. Go ahead. I don't mean to interrupt you. But
yeah. Well, in some cases they do, but they've been instructed not to diagnose.
I see. Really?
Yes. The threat of the pulling of a license to practice can really bend people. Okay.
Sure.
And you can say, well, they're weak. Well, no, they're not necessarily weak. They just allow themselves to be intimidated. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And that's a big problem we have in our society where people will always say, oh, my goodness. They see someone being pulled out, tased or whatever, and they say, well, what did the person do wrong? Good chance they didn't do anything.
Right. Right. And
they just wrote the wrong letter to a congressman who was on the take from a multinational corporation, okay?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
The point being is that when you take a look at how they lay out a chemtrail dispersion, in the United States, most of our winds come from the west,
okay.
All right?
Okay.
So what they'll do is they'll lay down chemtrails west of, say, for instance, I'm in the central part of Pennsylvania, up by the border, They'll lay down chemtrails west of us near the Ohio-Pennsylvania line near Lake Erie.
Okay.
And a number of hours later, maybe a half a day later, it'll reach us here.
I see.
And then they'll chemtrail over this area, and that'll wind up a few days later or a few hours later, depending on the speed of the wind, over by the Delaware Water Gap where New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania come together.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? However, if you're up on a mountain like I happen to be 2,400 feet above sea level, when you're up this high, you catch it all the time.
Wow.
I have been, there are one case at a time I remember, I was I had a gas mask on with NBC cartridge for 4 hours up here.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And I also raised chickens, and I closed the coop down tight, and I closed the windows, and I lit a small fire in the wood stove so that there would be evacuation of air from inside rather coming down.
Sure.
And that's one of the ways people can help them deal with it. But they're not going to stop. The whole idea here, too, is with regard to the interruption of the of food production is so that the food is controlled by, like I said, a very small number of large companies.
Mm-hmm.
Monsanto has a lot to do with it. So does DuPont with Pioneer Seed.
Okay.
DeKalb Engineering is the company that formed the GMO seeds.
Really? Huh.
GMO seeds, the reason they don't have a problem is that they took, you know, they say it's impossible to merge animal and vegetable, but they did. They take, for instance, corn, they take the combine DNA out of white laboratory rats. For all of the grains, they take the combine DNA out of white laboratory mice. And that's just a drop in a bucket with regard. DeKalb Engineering initially came to the United States from Germany in 1990. And they've done some, let's just say, horrific experiments with regard to transhumanism. Okay?
I almost hate to ask what they've done, but...
Yeah, it's not a good thing. So what you're looking at is a combination of animal and vegetable, and that's a hard combination to beat with regard to people trying to grow food for themselves.
Sure.
Also, when this particular type of corn is grown, it's conducive to all kinds of diseases. Oddly enough, even though it grows like a bad weed.
Sure.
And that poses problems to livestock in the area and other people in the area who live there or are trying to grow food for themselves.
Sure.
So this whole thing with chemtrails really and also it's basically what you're looking at is, quite frankly, is population control.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Okay?
Sure. Makes sense. Doesn't make sense, but I can understand.
Well, yeah, to them it does, but, you know, they look at someone like you or me or any of the other people who are concerned about this as useless eaters.
That's what Ted Turner said once, useless eaters.
We're useless eaters.
Yeah.
I do, let's put it this way, I do more work in 1 hour by accident than Ted does in a whole week. I live on a working homestead, and I am the worker, okay?
That's funny. That's funny.
Okay.
Dr. Enge, I wanted to mention this on the air because you referred me to this excellent video called What on Earth Are They Spraying? And I urge all my listeners around the world to just Google that or go to StartPage, www.startpage.com. As between Google and StartPage, I prefer StartPage because unlike Google, StartPage doesn't track you for your searches. But anyway, if you find that video, What on Earth Are They Spraying? That'll give you some good background on the chemtrail issue. What do you think the future holds? Do you think they'll stop spraying chemtrails, regardless of how many people protest? What do you think?
I don't think that they will stop. If you take a look at, and it's not just here in the United States, it's all over the world.
Well, let me explain this real quick. I just came back from Europe last night, and I know that in Norway there is some spraying, chemical trails spraying there. Here's Norway, a beautiful country. I mean, it's just, it's absolutely gorgeous. The fjords and the mountains, people are wonderful there. And here they've got these planes flying overhead. But as a friend of mine explained it, they are a part of NATO. So the U.S. Air Force, which has been responsible for this chemtrail spraying, does spray over Norway. In Switzerland, Switzerland's different. Switzerland is not a part of NATO. It's not a part of the EU. It has its own independent monetary system. It's not part of the euro. And they don't have chemtrails. But the thing that I've heard about, and perhaps you could provide some information on this, is that in U.S. commercial aircraft, there have been reports of mechanics reporting strange configurations in the fuel systems of some commercial airlines in the United States and elsewhere, where they've added the chemtrail chemicals to the fuel system itself, so that when the plane's flying, you have no idea. People have no idea that they're spraying all this crap into the environment. And for a country like Switzerland, let's say you have a Delta Airlines flight or United flight from the United States into Zurich, and that plane happens to it's configured with the chemicals that are banned in Switzerland, that the Swiss government has not allowed our government, the U.S. government, to spray their people with this crap. But yet, if there's a U.S. plane configured with this garbage in it, it's going to be spraying the Swiss people as well as all along their route. And I know I have a lot of listeners in Switzerland, and if there's anyone there from the Swiss government, you might consider doing an inspection of U.S. planes landing at the Zurich airport or anywhere else in Switzerland, because they could be very well spraying your citizens with this chemical crap without your permission, without your knowledge, and you'd only know that by perhaps impounding the plane and doing a surprise examination.
To have it included in the fuel would be counterproductive, okay?
Okay.
What they probably have are separate tanks.
Sure.
Separate pumping systems, and also probably booms. I know what I've seen is booms sticking out of large aircraft that look very much like the refueling booms that the Air Force uses to refuel aircraft in flight.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But they would have to use a system similar to that. To have these constituents in the fuel, you'd have all kinds of grief.
Right.
You wouldn't be able to run the turbines. Okay.
The report that I saw on the internet was that it was a mechanic at the Seattle airport, and the chemtrails themselves were not mixed with the fuel. They were separate tanks.
Yes.
And he did not disclose which airline, but I always think of that. I thought of that last night when I flew back from Zurich into Seattle, and I said to myself, how many planes are there configured this way? People have no idea, absolutely no idea.
Well, the other thing, too, that we have a problem since 9/11, all of the AWACS that are flying over this country right now
mm-hmm.
and along the coastline
right.
are foreign aircraft manned by foreign crews, and it wouldn't be very difficult for them to carry out the program while they were up there on patrol, because they have very long stay times. Okay, they're designed
really?
To be up there for long periods of time.
Interesting.
And along their route, depending on what the target area was, they would be able to do their dirty deed.
Interesting. Dr. Anger, could you hold on for a second? Don't hang up or anything. I'd like to bring on Scott Stevens, if that's all right, to join in this discussion.
Go ahead.
Scott, are you there?
I am.
Scott,
I am.
Welcome to the program. I'm so happy you could come on today with short
notice.
Glad
to be here. And interesting comment, though, on the aircraft and their ability to loiter. Most of them that I see are flying in the 250 to 350 mile per hour range.
Mm.
Most of these planes are designed to be really about 85 to 90% of full speed. And so they're going to burn fuel, and that's how they've been designed. So you throttle them back 200 miles per hour, they're going to be able to stay aloft for so much longer.
Mm.
So it really will inhibit or deal with the congestion issues when they have to come in, refuel, and so forth.
Interesting. Scott, I'd like to introduce you to Dr. Therese Anger. A wonderful, I would term you as I called you a scientist, but I guess an environmental consultant is a better term. But I think you do wonderful work. I had sent Dr. Anger the lab results I had done of fish, air, and water in Moses Lake, Washington, where they spray continually every two or three days. There's high amounts of sulfur, barium, aluminum, titanium, all these weird chemicals that get people sick. But, Scott, for the benefit of my many listeners around the world, could you please tell us a little bit about your background and how you got interested in this topic?
Well, I, I kind of got interested in meteorology in the Boy Scouts, and I was 12. Mm-hmm. And that led to a mentorship through high school from a local meteorologist in eastern Idaho. And that was really, really important for the formation of my career. Mm-hmm. I went off to University of Kansas, and while in school, started at KTKA-TV in Topeka. From there up to lots of agricultural and energy forecasting at RFD-TV. And then chased some storms at KGRH down in Tulsa, WRGB out in Albany in the last 10 years of my career before I fell into this environmental and geoengineering in the early 2000s. I was in eastern Idaho in Idaho Falls, Pocatello.
Mm-hmm.
And I just was really struggling with forecast accuracy. Mm-hmm. You know, forecasting the weather is not difficult. Mm-hmm. It's not that difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And there was something playing with it. There was some delta, some change that was not being acknowledged or picked up by the models. And mm-hmm. the guys in Washington, D.C. were feeling that angst as well in their accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was late 90s, early 2000s, and my red flags were up. I didn't know what was going on, what was doing it, but I was really struggling with accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
And that led to, well, more of my alternative, you know, news field reading, and the term chemtrails came up, and geoengineering, and that launched me down this rabbit hole.
Mm-hmm.
And from about 2002 to 2005, that was my laser-pointed attention, was on figuring this out.
Mm-hmm.
So I bought cameras and computers and time-lapse software, wired the house, and essentially began surveying, you know, during the daylight hours. And mm-hmm. within 3 months of that, I kind of figured out largely what the bulk of the chemtrails were for. It became very apparent and very obvious.
Mm-hmm.
But it wouldn't have been possible without the time-lapse imagery to see how the planes interact with a previously laid out trail.
Mm-hmm.
A trail left in the sky is going to deform in some way or another.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to spread, it's going to be lifted vertically, or going to be into a subsidence environment where it sinks, or pushed laterally back and forth. And these trails illuminate when those forces are placed upon them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And other planes come along and will precisely mark off these places where these trails remain illuminated or remain visible to our eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes very, very, very simple as to what they're doing up there. Mm-hmm. When seen at 150 times normal speed or 300 times normal speed, it's very apparent.
Mm-hmm.
All of this concern about HARP, all of these massive apparatuses that are around the country, that's all a misdirection.
Mm-hmm.
Technology is aboard these planes.
Mm-hmm.
It's small, it's compact, it's mm-hmm. of low wattage, of very specific frequencies.
Mm-hmm.
There's no reason to need to have these massive operations when you've got 1,000 planes
mm-hmm.
that are mobile, can get on site, can go through hurricanes, can go through big thunderstorms, can amp up snowstorms, or at the same time step on them so you don't get the rain and you end up with a California-like drought. It's so simple.
Do you think, Scott, that the California drought is geoengineered?
Holy, holy.
Wow.
Holy so.
Well,
I mean, you cannot, there's not a day, me being here in the western U.S.,
mm-hmm.
that I'm not watching what's happening on in the eastern Pacific.
Wow.
And you can see these little impulses. One, there's one rolling through Arizona right now and then impacting southern Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
This little storm has had chemtrails focused on it for the last 6 days.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you have 1,000, 1,200, 1,500 aircraft from the size of little Learjets
mm-hmm.
to big C-5, C-17 military mm-hmm. transport, 747, mm-hmm. Airbus 380s, they've mm-hmm. got the whole gamut of aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't even have to be laying a trail to be participating in geoengineering. They can have the technology on board to deal with ionization, electromagnetic, very, very subtle electromagnetic pulls on the atmosphere, mark it by a chemtrail, and you can see how it literally will tug the water out of the storm and change the shape of the cloud, just a very gentle electrical tug.
Well, Scott,
this planet, no, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just thinking, hoping you don't mind me interrupting, but this goes both you, Scott, and Therese, for your wonderful work. But I fail to understand the logic. For example, if in fact, since California is having this devastating drought, I know mm-hmm. I have a lot of listeners down in the Bay Area in Los Angeles, elsewhere, and this goes to the spring, this summer too, in eastern Washington, dumping tons of sulfur, which made it much harder, so that thousands of acres of forest fires in eastern Washington burning up lots of homes. I mean, people in Washington State are not very happy losing their home. And here you're saying that our government, the U.S. government, U.S. Air Force, is spending our tax dollars in geoengineering so that the drought is even worse in worse in California. I fail to understand.
I would disagree.
Okay.
We were assuming that there's a connection between the U.S. government and these operations.
Okay.
And I would challenge that assumption.
All right. Okay.
We were to the point in the mid-50s where Eisenhower wanted to nuke Area 51.
Okay.
Wanted to nuke those rogue operations.
Sure.
Because this technology, the agreements with those that are not from Earth had gotten seriously out of hand.
Sure.
To the point of losing control of the military of the United States.
Sure.
So I think we've got a shadow program. We've got a Federal Reserve that can print dollars with abandon.
Uh-huh.
And it's that money that is pouring out of the back of the Fed that feeds these black budgets, these black ops. So whether we're paying tax dollars or not, it doesn't matter.
Okay.
It's Boeing. It's Lockheed Martin. It's Honeywell. It's these technology companies. When they quit taking Federal Reserve notes to digital dollars for their quote-unquote work, then it'll stop.
I see.
If we had to rely on this nation's physical treasure, gold, silver, and natural resources, then this program would have stopped in its tracks long ago.
Mm.
We would have been bankrupt.
Mm. Fascinating. Fascinating. So, I do have a gentleman on standby. He's a contactee of the Galactic Alliance. It's a group of 435 million benevolent, mostly human, all benevolent planets in this part of the galaxy, comprised of 7 trillion members. And he has information he'd like to share to us today on the whys of the chemtrail program. And if you like, gentlemen, I could bring him on briefly now.
Right.
Okay. It'll take a minute for my sound engineer to get Scott on the line. But your perspective, Scott, is very interesting. And thank you for saying that. And I think it's certainly a good comment.
Time-lapse imagery, you can see the planes, they come along, the trail is laid, and the clouds form almost immediately on one side or in the middle of that trail.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there's an immediate reaction by the atmosphere to whatever they're doing up there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's like any other kind of building. You need a draftsman,
mm-hmm.
and you're going to need a chalk line to figure out what is straight and what is not.
Sure.
And largely we're dealing with geometry. Resonating geometry that is just undulating through the atmosphere of this planet.
Mm-hmm.
And so they need these lines, these straight lines to keep, let's just say, track of all the different discrete layers of the atmosphere, how they're moving, which direction they're moving, and this is all real-time surveillance. The atmosphere has got to be laced with these things so they have their understanding of what it's doing.
Sure, sure. Scott and Teresa, I'm going to bring on Scott Lemriel, the author of the Ceres Agenda and a face-to-face contact with the Galactic Alliance for the last 52 years for an out-of-this-world commentary. Scott, are you there?
Mm-hmm. I happen to be here.
Oh, Scott.
Hi, Scott. Oh, Scott. Oh, there's Scott Stevens and Scott Lemriel. I'll say.
Hey, Scott. How are you guys doing?
Good.
We're fine. Thanks, Scott. I don't know if you're listening or not, but I'd love Scott has a. I think he has an out-of-this-world viewpoint on what's been going on.
I think, I was listening to the program, to both gentlemen. And one of the primary functions for me, what I can make a comment about from my experience, about why normal human beings would do this to other human beings is very simple. They aren't in control of what they're doing anymore. These aren't rational decisions they're making. And that goes, believe it or not, off-world. And it has to do with a treaty that was brought into existence under Eisenhower to get extraterrestrial technology that was classified. So when you think about this, when you look out in space, there are vast world systems out there that have benevolent, highly evolved, spiritually evolved beings. And there's a few totalitarian systems out there. What you have to ask yourself is, what type of race that's benevolent would be willing to exchange more antiquated extraterrestrial technology to get elements off the planet, do some DNA research? What kind of a race would not care if we kept our nuclear weapons and radioactive materials? You follow that trail, and you find a whole lot of interesting things. So in my journeys and in my experience with people from other worlds since I was a boy, I've learned a great deal about how this system got put in place after World War II and why, and not by bad people. They were good men. Presidents were good, but they were blackmailed into it. Goes into something we won't talk about right now, but think about this. You can't blame these pilots or the military commanders that send them out on it or elected leaders, because think about it. Nobody on this program, either you, Ted, me, or the two gentlemen that are on, would accept $1 billion and go out and do that to our own people. So you have to really put in perspective that in a compartmentalized system, people doing this are only told only as much as they need to know to do their job and nothing more. I'm sure most of them suspect that there's something wrong with what they're doing, but the way this has worked is done in a way where they don't really have the free will they think they have, mm-hmm. because they wouldn't do it if they did.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Scott?
Yep.
I'm here.
Just a correction. It's not the two men who are on. There's a lady and a man who's on.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't hear all the programs, so I apologize to the lady.
With regard to the military doing it, there's a little thing called the Uniform Code of Military Justice.
Mm-hmm.
Under the UCMJ, we are at war and have been many times and continue to be on, but in wartime, if they disobey an order, it's treason, which is punishable by death.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Yep.
That guillotine, as it was, hangs over their head. Either that, or even though they may be experienced and tenured pilots, they'll wind up peeling potatoes for the rest of their career.
Mm-hmm. I know.
Yeah.
So they do it. Now, there are some pilots that have refused. They say, it's been said that I've heard from some fairly reliable sources, mm-hmm. that they refuse to carry out the unlawful order, which is proper. Mm-hmm. It has a lot to do with the oath that an officer takes. With regard to military service, with regard to our Constitution.
Right.
And there are still some officers left and few non-coms left that take that oath very seriously. They're still around, but they're probably not going to have much of a career path left.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them actually have been run out of the service. I think you've seen that in the last 8 years in the present administration.
Yeah, I'm aware of it, yeah.
Yeah, so there are some that will say, no, it's not a lawful order. I will not do it under any circumstance. But there's others that will, and their commanders and those people who control their commanders welcome their cooperation. And then we see what happens up there with regard to the dumping of these chemicals.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Enger, Therese, I'd love to ask you a quick question about the environmental effects of eating fish that's contaminated by the chemtrails, for example, the aluminum, barium, and strontium. It's one thing to breathe it in when they're spraying it. When it goes into the plants and the fish, that I assume also has its health effects as well, because you internalize the chemicals.
Yes, and also it gets into your digestive tract, from there into your blood.
Mm-hmm.
Inhaling it gets into your lungs through the small veins and vessels and arteries in your lungs. But you're actually getting a twofer, okay?
I see, yeah.
And there's no way to win that one.
Sure, sure.
You'll find that most of these, the heavy metals, will go right to the major organs, liver, kidney, that sort of thing. And, you know, how many times can you get a kidney or a liver transplant.
Right, right. Well, I've been living in an area that's, I just moved from there now, but for the last 14 years I had been living in an area that was continually doused by chemtrails, and I feel like I really need to get detoxed.
There are a number of, I don't like to use companies' names or the names of people on the air that you could get it from. Off the air, I can get you some information where you'd be able to get to a herbalist, which would be able to give you a regimen to help you do that.
Wonderful, right? Wonderful. Could I give out your email? Is that all right for people to contact you?
No problem at all. You can give that out if you wish, or I can give it out now if you want.
Okay, please, go right ahead. Therese, thank you.
Okay, my email is ladyhawk, that's LadyHawk, the number 16, at inetsurf.net.
And it's INETSURF.net.
That is correct, yes. I live in a rural area, and our DSL line up here is fried, so I go off this. I live on this mountain, and I go off the mountain 2 days a week to go down to a small ISP or the local public library, mm-hmm. so I can use Wi-Fi. Mm-hmm. And I do answer all emails, and if I'm called, I have an answering machine, and I do return calls. I don't call.
Okay. The environmental, the one herbal place you recommended is a wonderful lady. For people also who is interested in that, just email me as well, Tedmar at outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. This question goes to both Scotts and Therese. This is a bigger question, of course, is the media. And I know that I think 90% of the major media in the United States is controlled by five or six corporations. And what information we do get on chemtrails, some of it's very good, but it's on the internet. But you generally don't hear about this issue on the major media. What do you think, friends? Why there's such a blackout on this subject on the major media?
I can tell you.
Okay, Scott.
Okay. So a viewer calls in to the newsroom. Yeah. The newsroom says, "All right, let's look outside. You look at all that action in the sky. It's littered with trails. It wasn't like that yesterday, and we know it may or not be there tomorrow."
Mm-hmm.
Where do you go for an expert? Mm-hmm. How do you enterprise the story, which is the term?
Mm-hmm.
So you have two options. You either go to your National Weather Service office, if you're so fortunate to have one in your town, or you go to the university, or you go to a local science person.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're not versed or have explored the alternative media, all you're going to get is the same stuff regurgitated back to you.
Sure.
There's no professionals. There's no points. There's no places for these newsrooms to go to get truthful information, or at least out-of-the-box information.
Sure. Sure.
That's the big issue.
I've approached the local paper in Moses Lake about the chemtrail story when the planes were flying overhead, and they've ignored every one of my requests. I think I've requested it five times for them to report on it. They ignore it.
They've got no sources.
Mm-hmm.
And without a source, you know, to check up or follow on, the story kind of dies.
Mm-hmm.
It just dies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Also, too, you'll find that, like, if you try to address the issue with I know in that one DVD we talked about, what in the world are they spraying?
Mm-hmm.
One of the people there was trying to interview Dianne Feinstein, and she basically didn't even look at the person. She walked sideways from him.
Really?
You know. That you call my office and talk to one of my aides.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, that and about $2 to get you a can of soda out of a vending machine. You know, it's obvious that there was one legislator, I forget what state from, okay, well, on a federal level, that did try to include it in legislation, and it was removed very quickly.
That was Dennis Kucinich, 2001.
Hmm.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in matter of fact, just under the speed of light, it was taken out of the document.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Haven't there been? And this goes to both you Scott, and to Therese. I've heard of studies indicating that the aluminum rates in the air and the soil is thousands of times higher what they should be in some parts of the country due to the chemtrails, and that's had an effect in increased admissions of people into nursing homes with Alzheimer's disease. Have you heard the same thing?
What I know is, for the atmosphere, the conductivity has been increased by fourfold.
Mm-hmm.
And this is in the last 35 to 40 years.
Okay.
That's huge.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So what we'll see is an increase in the number of lightning strikes.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be the end result, is
mm-hmm.
that you're going to see more. Well, lightning will start in a thunderstorm more quickly than it would otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
You will see more lightning strikes out of low precipitation thunderstorm events than you would have prior to this.
Mm-hmm.
And what it does is it gives their technology, their electromagnetic tools, a grip into the atmosphere that they wouldn't have without this. And this is why there are so many short trail chemtrails up there. Not the long-lasting one, but the short blue or orange ones.
Mm-hmm.
And they're there to keep the quotient of this metallic metals, these nanoparticles, up there.
When I was... I just want to tell you, yesterday I flew from Zurich to Washington, D.C. on my first leg of my flight. And when we were flying, after we left Zurich, about 29,000, 30,000 feet above sea level, I looked over on the south part of the plane. And over France, I could see all these different suspicious-looking chemtrails back and forth across the horizon in short spurts. And then we got over the Atlantic, and they were completely gone. And it wasn't just contrails. Contrails are the regular kind of airplane exhaust you find from aircraft. These were chemtrails, definitely. You could see them marked out over France.
Well, and at this point of the game, every single plane flying has the plumbing on board. They come out of the factory that way.
Mm-hmm.
It's just simpler to have one model coming out, and so they've all got the gear.
Mm-hmm.
Now, whether the airlines, you know, these airlines have to play the game. Otherwise, you'll have a crash.
Okay.
Or two crashes.
Sure.
So they've all got to play the game.
The other thing, too, with regard to lightning strikes, up in this area, we've actually had dry strikes without precipitation.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And,
low precipitation event.
I'm up on the top of the Appalachian Mountains here. I'm 2,400 feet above sea level, which is half a mile below the top. And we've had dry strikes here on a day where, yeah, it was sunny, maybe there was a few clouds, and then all of a sudden you've got one.
Mm-hmm.
Bigger
mm-hmm.
than life, okay? Mm-hmm. Bigger than life.
Yeah, I'm like you. I'm at elevation. I'm in southern Colorado, up at 8,100 feet. You know, and then these forests have been turned so crispy over the last 30 years.
Sure.
The winters have not gotten cold enough to kill this pine beetle.
Mm-hmm.
And so it has ravaged the forest from British Columbia to Arizona and eastward to Colorado.
Wow.
And last year was Colorado's turn, Colorado, Utah, New Mexico. This year it's farther west,
mm-hmm.
the burn. So we'll just see if we can't get this manufactured ridge along the west coast to finally collapse.
Mm-hmm.
We can bring some rain in there and finally get these topsoils wet, get some stream flows back up to at least normal so we can get some recharge going now that we're into this new water year. This is very important if we're to avoid famine. That is the big thing, and I think ultimately that is the agenda. And we're looking at this not as a month or a year or two, but a generational issue. We're dealing with food and food production. You don't have a Monsanto, you don't have a big GMO issue without there being some underlying fundamental issue as basic as being able to feed yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the secondary or the binary aspect of this, of weather engineering, is the ability to feed 7 billion people, or inability to feed, as the case is probably going to be.
Also, if you take a look at the effect on people, with regard to the concentrations that we see at ground level now, if you had those same concentrations inside of a building that was manufacturing whatever, okay, I'd say a good part of them would be as what is known as the action level. The action level would be 50% of what would be permitted for an 8-hour exposure in the workplace.
Mm-hmm.
When you get at the action level, you have to do one or two things. You either have to have personal protective equipment being issued or engineering controls initiated to deal with it.
One of the
people are out there with, there's no engineering control, and there's very few of us that are willing to put on protective equipment.
Well, the whole area,
so everybody open to whatever's going to take place to them.
Sure. Well, Therese, in the town that I just moved from in Moses Lake, Washington, the pilots dumping these chemtrails come so close. One guy, I saw his mustache in his eyes. I mean, he must have been 60 yards above the ground. It was just nuts, all this crap. I've got pictures of him. You know, I felt like I waved at him a couple times. He waved back.
What kind of aircraft was he flying, do you know?
He was flying an Air Force P-130. I've even got I've got pictures of up close. I've got pictures of the nozzles. I've got pictures of the...
The C-130.
C-130, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
It's... We've got about a minute to go. I would love to have you on in a couple of months. Scott Lemriel, I want to bring you on to talk about something else in about a half hour, so please stand by. But for Scott Stevens and Therese Enger, I'd like to give you, just go ahead and take the last minute and say whatever you'd like to say to wrap up today's show on chemtrails?
After you, go ahead.
Oh, me?
Yeah.
I think ultimately the only thing that is going to change is awareness. Mm-hmm. And if we can get to this critical mass of public awareness that this is not right, then we can get this agenda mainstreamed.
And I want to invite everyone to send me their comments on today's show to outofthisworld1150@gmail.com. I've got listeners throughout Europe, Asia, Africa, South America, and Asia, and in Japan as well. And everyone's interested in the same issue. Teresa, go ahead. There's a few seconds left. Like, just go ahead and give closing a couple of seconds.
Well, from the point of view of what you can do locally, I try to educate people with regard to looking up. Most people don't look up, as a matter
okay.
of fact.
Okay.
And I say, well, you know, do you watch the stars and the constellations at night? Oh, yes, because we have very dark areas here, and you can time, and you'll see the tic-tac-toe up there. And that's not natural, it's man-made.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, both of you gentlemen, for coming on today. I'll invite you on in a few months. And please stay tuned, my dear listeners, for the next segment of our program.